Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Hello, everyone around the world, I should say. Welcome to another edition of Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. I'm sorry I flubbed that intro, folks. I always pay homage to the great Eddie Goldman every intro, every edition of Carson's Corner. Eddie Goldman, of course, is the godfather of MMA media, the conscience of combat sports. I affectionately call Eddie the Great One. He is the Great One. And as a tribute to him, I totally copy his introduction. Hello, everyone around the world. Once again, this is Eddie Goldman. This is Bob Carson of Carson's Corner. And we literally are being listened to around the world, all around the world. It's great. It's the power of the internet. It's the power of broadcasting, folks. So we're very, very pleased to have you with us here this Friday night. I got to tell you, with my shows I do, I never plan out my shows. I never know. It used to be that this show would be centered around guests. We would try to reach out to a whole bunch of guests, and whenever they were available and I was available, I would schedule time to do the show. We had sometimes set days, not set days, just whenever we can get guests. Now, this show is not around guests anymore. I've spoken about just how difficult it is and how the MMA media, the so-called MMA media, has been focused primarily on interviewing fighters. And a lot of times fighters are not interesting interviews. Sometimes they are, but I just feel the market is being oversaturated with interviews. Nothing but interviews. Okay, we're going to talk to three UFC fighters that are fighting tomorrow night at the UFC 225. It's just played out. It's just too much, because it's the same questions, it's the same answers, and this is not a knock on fighters at all. It's just the way that the so-called MMA media operates, just how fictitious they are. Just Jack Klassen. No, Jack, I don't think I want you to call in, Jack. This is not a political show here. Okay, if you want to call in on my political show, you can on Monday, 347-326-9749. But I don't want to have a political discussion with the very libertarian Jack Klassen over there. And where are you from, Jack? Canada? Willie Stanberry, how are you? I'm doing good, my friend. Good to hear from you. I'd like to catch up with you sometime to find out what's going on. I was curious. I haven't spoken to you for a while. But in any event, we don't do interviews really that much anymore. And so pretty much the shows are scheduled around my impulsive behavior, okay? When I go home, it's 9 o'clock, I want to do a show. Maybe there's a UFC event and I'm not tired. I'm not going to sleep. I don't have work. You know, I have maybe an hour or two of free time. I impulsively schedule the show, just like I do on the underground forum, on the posts, on the underground forum. When there's a thread, when there's a post or something like that, I feel like doing it. I just do it, folks. Okay, that's the nature. That's what we're doing now on Carson's Corner, and so it's difficult for me to get guests. I really you know, want you to understand that. But in any event, we're here. It's Friday night. It's 10:06 on the East Coast. We're very, very pleased to have you with us here. We've got the Facebook live stream going on. It's been a while since I did the Facebook live stream, but we have that going on. So you could listen on Facebook, or you could listen via Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. All right, we've got UFC 225 coming up tomorrow, and I got to tell you, I am really excited for this card. I know a couple weeks ago I said that I wasn't really that into MMA. You know, the UFC just signed a big deal with ESPN. They're moving their content now over to ESPN Plus, where you got to spend something like $5 for the service. Nobody knows what's going on with Fight Pass, UFC Fight Pass. I did cancel my subscription to UFC Fight Pass, so it wasn't because I was dissatisfied with the product. Actually, I was very satisfied with the UFC Fight Pass. I got introduced to a lot of promotions on there. We've had folks over from Victory Fighting Championship on the program. You've got Invicta that broadcasts via Fight Pass. So it wasn't that I was just disappointed with it. It's just financially I couldn't do it anymore. $10 a month. You know, when you have no money, sometimes you got to cut things, discretionary spending, and that's what UFC Fight Pass was. Maybe I'll join again tomorrow so I could see some of the prelims for UFC 225, because UFC 225 has really good prelims. I know Joseph Benavidez was crying about being on the prelims. Did you see this? This is like a couple weeks ago. That's like old news. You know, Joseph Benavidez, who fought for the championship twice, I think is number one or number two in that division, that flyweight division, was just belly aching about being on the prelims or whatever it is. And he had some valid points, but he fought twice for the title and he lost to Demetrius Johnson, I believe, twice. And, you know, you've got Alistair Overeem that's fighting on the undercard. You got Rashad Evans, a former light heavyweight champion, fighting on the undercard. So it's a very, very good card that they're producing, probably the best of the year so far, considering their last pay-per-view, UFC 224, got something like something ridiculous, like 85,000 buys, 85,000 buys. That was where Amanda Nunes fought Raquel Pennington in Brazil. It was such a disaster. They didn't promote that card at all. And, you know, people didn't buy it. But this card is very, very interesting because you have two what were to be championship fights. Now, Yoel Romero missed weight by 0.2 pounds, and so now his fight versus Robert Whittaker is not going to be a championship fight. It's still the main event. It's still going through. And then you of course, have RDA fighting Colby Covington. And these are really two of the main fights on the card. However, like I said, the card really has some really, really good fights. I want to talk about, first of all, I mean, I'm not going to go in any particular order here, but I want to talk about the women's fight, the women's featherweight fight. Because I don't know if you guys watch the Embedded series. Embedded, UFC does original programming, and UFC Embedded is a very, very good program that they deliver via YouTube. And also, if you're a Fight Pass subscriber, you can watch the UFC Embeddeds. And I try to watch the UFC Embeddeds because you learn a little bit about what's going on with training, what's going on with the fighters and their personal lives, and you know what's happening here and with traveling and are there any issues with weight cutting? Although, you know, granted, you're only going to get so much honesty on UFC Embedded. You're not going to get really, you know, you'll see a lot of the promotional stuff and you'll see, you know, a lot of what's going on around the fighters. But as far as, you know, like weight cutting and as far as, you know, any potential injuries or anything, you know, serious, you're not going to see that on the UFC Embedded. So you could sort of take it for what it's worth. Like I said, I like watching it because it's hard to keep up with fighters and who they're training with. You know, they tend to rotate camps and you know, go to different places, and it's really, really difficult. But the UFC Embedded is definitely solid programming as far as I'm concerned. Now, you've got Megan Anderson, again, however you want to pronounce it, fighting Holly Holm. And I got to tell you, if you watch the UFC Embedded, Megan Anderson looks like she sounds like she doesn't think that she can win this fight. That's just the initial impression that I have. You know, she just didn't sound confident at all. I know that Holly has to be a betting favorite going into this fight. No question about it. You know, with her experience and everything like that. I'm not saying Megan can't win the fight because she clearly can. I mean, you know, anybody, she could put Holly away with one punch or one kick. No question about that. She's a big, big girl, a big, powerful striker. And her only loss, I think, came to Cindy Dandois years ago when Megan, you know, first started fighting. Actually, no, she has two losses. She lost her first fight, and then she lost against Cindy almost 3 years ago. But, you know, since then, she's won, you know, four in a row. And what's her coach, James Krause, talks about broken orbital bones and everything like that, how, you know, it can she's trying to go for her sixth orbital bone shatter, which is kind of really, really a very vivid and disturbing way of describing, you know, what a fighter does. Because I just read, you guys just read about this Josh Emmett, all the facial damage that he suffered when he fought Jeremy Stephens. And my God, I mean, these fighters are like, you know, getting their face destroyed, getting their faces destroyed by elbows, by knees, by punches. And it really begs the question, you know, how much safer is boxing or is MMA versus boxing, considering, go read about the injuries that Josh Emmett sustained after his fight versus Jeremy Stephens. And just, it's really, really disturbing. But nonetheless, Megan Anderson does have power, and she can potentially defeat Holly Holm. I'm not saying that she can. I'm just saying that she really didn't appear confident. It just didn't sound like she believed that she was going to win. She was just grateful for the opportunity, and you know, she's going to try to go out there and do what was kind of. It was almost like Yana Kunitskaya before she fought Cyborg. Everybody knew that was just going to be a squash job, which it was, but you know, you knew that Yana was just you know, happy for the opportunity. And you know, so we're going to see what happens. I am intrigued by that matchup. Holly Holm says that she still can compete with the best. I definitely agree with her. She's the only person, I believe, that went five rounds with Cyborg, and that was a good fight. And, you know, Cyborg had some damage in that fight, but Holly's a very, very fast striker and very good striker, and I don't see her getting knocked out by Megan Anderson. I think she maybe can get some sort of a late round stoppage, maybe a decision victory, but we'll see what happens. But nonetheless, that fight really, really intrigues me because, you know, Megan Anderson is someone that we wanted to see a long time in the UFC. She was supposed to fight a bunch of times, I believe, and she had some problems with her visa, and you know, she's supposed to fight Cyborg, and there was, you know, some sort of a personal dilemma going on in her life. I don't know. I don't know the circumstances of which, but nonetheless, she's going to be in the UFC tomorrow night facing Holly Holm. Now, CM Punk is fighting on this card, and I got to tell you, it's going to bring a lot of people over from the WWE who are fans of CM Punk and who want to see him fight again. And a lot of people were sour about this. A lot of, in the MMA community, they don't believe that CM Punk, you know, deserves to be in the UFC, let alone on the main card. They point out to the fact that, as I mentioned, you've got people like, you know, Alistair Overeem, you've got Claudia Gadelha and Rashad Evans, and as I pointed out earlier, Joseph Benavidez, all on the prelim cards on Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1. But, you know, I'm happy that this is happening because it's the crossover appeal. It's the fact that a lot of people are going to be watching CM Punk fight. It's intriguing. He's not a UFC-level fighter. I agree with that. Did you see him on the pads in the UFC embedded in one of the one of his training, you know, sessions? He looked terrible. I'm not going to lie. I like the guy. I think he has a good attitude. You know, some clown was on the underground today talking about how CM Punk has an arrogant attitude, and CM Punk is you know, lecturing fighters on how to make weight. So I don't think he's arrogant at all. He seems to be showing the sport respect. He has the respect of a lot of fighters, and you know, maybe he comes across like that to a few people. But I think for the most part, everybody out there acknowledges that he's been respectful and has had the right attitude about trying to better himself and trying to really train and improve his ability as a martial artist. You know, he's not the most athletic guy. We've talked about that before. He's 39 years old. He doesn't have the wrestling pedigree as, you know, someone like Brock Lesnar does, or you know, some of the other WWE wrestlers that may have crossed over to MMA. But I think he's putting his time in. I think he's trying, and I think he's very realistic about his own ability. And, you know, look, Dana White said it best. I hate to agree with Dana White, but he said, if Alistair Overeem is selling as many pay-per-views as CM Punk is, then he would be on the main card. And that's what the UFC is about. The UFC is about selling pay-per-views. You know, their pay-per-view model is still intact, and it's going to be carrying over to the next year. And that's where they really have to make up a lot of their revenue. We know what they're getting from the ESPN deal, but now it has to be from pay-per-view. They have to get the most amount of money, the biggest bang for their buck on pay-per-view. And so, like I said, a lot of people, I am certainly interested in seeing CM Punk fight again. He fought against Mickey Gall, and, you know, he got crushed. Mike Jackson, on the other hand, got beaten too by Mickey Gall in a short amount of time. Mike Jackson claims to be an undefeated kickboxer. You know, probably, if I were to guess, would be a slight favorite in this fight. But this is an intriguing fight because it's CM Punk and because you want to see if he's able to win. This guy Mike Jackson, you know, this guy Mike Jackson has a podcast. Did you know that? I had no idea. Can you believe that everybody and their mother has a podcast now? You know, everybody, including yours truly, has opinions that are so important that it warrants a podcast. Oh man, it's just funny. So I want to see that fight. I really do. That's a welterweight contest. That's on the main card, and Joseph Benavidez is going to have to be on suicide watch. No, I'm just kidding, folks. I'm sorry. I'm kidding. I know that suicide is a very, very, really, you know, very, very difficult subject. I'll tell you a story. There was I'm not going to mention any names, but I'm a member of a Facebook group, and this we're going to talk about suicide anyway. That was part of the plan here tonight on the program, and we're going to – I guess we'll jump into it right now since I had that segue in. But I'm a member of a Facebook group that tells me anytime that someone from my high school dies. So, you know, there's always an update. You know, somebody dies, they have the obituaries, and they ultimately, you know, pass away. And there was a girl that was my age, 1 year younger than me, right? And she worked. I knew her brother. Her brother was a police officer, and I'm not gonna really go into detail here, names or anything like that. But I used to kind of work alongside her brother when I was at Walmart. Okay, and she died. She died suddenly, and I was doing a little research. I don't know the girl. I went to school with her. Maybe, I went to school with her. I know who she is, and I definitely remember her. And she worked for the prosecutor's office, and she died suddenly. And from what I can gather, it looked like a suicide. And then today, this morning, I woke up, or this afternoon, 4 or 5 o'clock, I woke up. It was my day off. I just did nothing but sleep. It was ridiculous. And I found out that Anthony Bourdain committed suicide. Hung himself in I don't know where. I didn't really read the circumstances there, but killed himself. That's really, really frightening. I mean, this is a guy who had a very successful show, was a very, very successful author, very famous. He was in very good shape. Okay, he was a big fan of MMA, and he kills himself. What's going on here, you know? And then was it last week or the week before, some fashion designer lady killed herself. This is like an epidemic here, and it's really frightening. I mean, we've certainly had our suicides last year with Chris Cornell and Chester Bennington. And according to research, suicide is up. It's up in the United States. And the only state that suicides are down is Nevada. Go figure. But it's like we're just becoming this crazy, crazy country. And apparently suicide, the increase of suicide is due to financial troubles and relationship troubles. I think it has to do with, you know, the system that we're in, the cutthroat system that we're in that's ultra competitive and rewards just a small group of people. And I just think it's really, really scary. And it's really, really unfortunate, but this is going to most likely continue. And Dana White was asked about this today during his media scrum. And Dana White said that the UFC will have to take care of any fighters that commit suicide or are thinking about committing suicide. They'll provide them with the resources and, you know, because obviously fighters with the brain injuries that they're going through, that they experience from fighting, and how you've got fighters that have post-traumatic stress as a result of their fighting, as a result of taking headshots, all of a sudden now fighters are depressed and they have PTSD. This is something that, you know, the UFC has to really get involved with and you know, try to prevent these fighters from killing themselves, because I would probably venture to say, I don't think this is too much of a leap to say this, that mixed martial arts fighters are probably going to be at a higher risk of suicide than the general population. And the reason why, a lot of it is, you know, because I mentioned you know, maybe injuries to the brain. Your junior Seau was a someone that committed suicide and was, you know, his brain revealed CTE. Aaron Hernandez, a lot of athletes that sustain shots to the head are more likely to commit suicide. But I got to tell you, mixed martial arts fighters, particularly MMA fighters in the UFC, are going to be really, really susceptible to suicide because of, as I mentioned, the cutthroat, ultra-competitive nature of MMA. The UFC, which is oversaturated their roster and arguably, you know, stripped their fighters of any type of identity. And, you know, you get someone, I'll give you a perfect example. Look at someone like Katsangano, whose husband committed suicide, right? A prime example or possibly prime candidate for that type of thing. In fact, she was recently on Joe Rogan's show, and she talked about, you know, depression and being on anti-depression medication and all that stuff. But, you know, these fighters have a very, very short shelf life, and they lose, and then all of a sudden they're not relevant anymore. All of a sudden, you know, Dana White doesn't call them anymore. Dana White doesn't need them anymore. And the best they could hope for is to get some stupid job as a commentator, one of these so-called analysts that you see all these fighters now. There's 5,000 fighters that you see, you know, on Fox Sports 1 or ESPN now that the UFC is moving over to ESPN, that are just, you know, just jockeying to get any type of analyst position. That's all these fighters really have, because there's no really pot of gold in mixed martial arts anymore. There really isn't. You know, it's all going to the top. It's all flowing to the top. It's all going to flow to the shareholders there, and these fighters are left with nothing, absolutely nothing. So you get someone like Katsangano, who's what, 35, 36 years old, has another few fights left. She loses, you know, God, she loses against Marion Renault, and then, you know, she'll, what, lost 3 or 4 in a row, then it's, what else are you going to do, you know? I feel bad for these fighters, but you could see what's coming. There's no type of representation. They don't have any type of unionization. They have no, they're independent contractors. They're at the mercy, essentially, of the UFC. And look, I'm not here, the UFC does things to make fighters better. The UFC, you know, I'm not here to just target them. You know, you have to acknowledge that there are things going on behind the scenes. Certainly there is. I'm sure there's stuff that Dana and some of these UFC employees and the higher-ups at the UFC have done to help fighters. I don't think there's any question about that. But, I mean, really, the grand scheme of things, everything points to the fact that, you know, these fighters are just getting screwed. They're getting siphoned. And anybody that tries to make a career out of becoming an MMA fighter, I think, is really misguided. You know, you got Conor McGregor, made $99 million last year, and that's it. And these fighters, if you make $1 million purse in MMA history, you are one of a handful of people, okay? I mean, even Bellator, for crying out loud. You know, Bellator is paying their fighters less than the UFC. It's like Walmart. You work for Walmart. Walmart is the number one retailer, okay? I believe, yeah, that's the case. Walmart is the number one retailer, and Walmart is the number one private employer. You work for Kmart, you make less. Kmart pays their employees less. You work for some other retailer, and you make less because they pay their employees less. So if the UFC is making the most amount of money, Bellator's, you're not making as much money. I mean, you've got prelim fighters in Bellator that are making $1,000, $2,000 to fight. I mean, that's what it was, you know, in pre Zuffa, that's what it was during, you know, the days of SCG and whatnot. So it's really, really a sad state of affairs. But this is what's driving suicides. I think this is part of the reason why we're seeing a spike in suicides. I don't want to really go into it. You know, maybe I'll discuss this on my political show. But you know, that's what's happening. We're going to see more suicides, I think, in mixed martial arts with MMA fighters who are very, very susceptible, more susceptible to suicides than most people are. All right, we got Jack Klassen on the program. I'm going to get to you in just a few moments, Jack. I see that you called in. I appreciate it. I want to talk real quickly because I only got another 15 minutes or so. We can always go over, but I want to talk real quickly about this Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. I called in on the inaugural press conference when they had the press conference a couple months ago. They had David Feldman on there. They had Rico Rodriguez, DJ Lindemann, Sean Wheelock, who was the announcer of this event, and a whole bunch of other people on this. There wasn't many media people on this call. So I called. I got to ask a couple questions. I got to ask Rico a question and DJ and so on and so forth. I didn't hear from him again. I tried to get press passes. They never responded back to me. They hired some PR firm to get the message out. They send, you know, emails to whoever they wanted to send them to. They had this big luncheon thing with all the boxing writers in New York City. And they spent $500,000 on this event, which only had maybe, you know, it was in this this ice palace. It was in, where was it? It was in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and it was at it was in an ice rink, the Cheyenne Ice and Event Center, and they had like 1,000, 2,000 people. It wasn't a lot of people. It was right around the amount of people you'd get for a regional MMA show or a local promotion like a Ring of Combat or something like that. And, you know, the fans were excited. It got a lot of press or got a lot of publicity on the social media sites. You know, you had a lot of people posting about it. There was a lot of eyes drawn to it and whatnot. It was $29 or something like that on pay-per-view. And, you know, it's hard to judge as far as, you know, did this guy make back his $500,000 that he pumped out for this? Who knows? I don't know. They brought in some people, you know, they had some decent MMA fighters on this card, but nobody's really going to know whether it's an success. Nobody's going to know whether or not, you know, people want to see the next installment of Bare Knuckle Fighting. Are they really, really, you know, really looking forward to that? I guess time will tell and whatnot. I certainly wasn't going to pay $29 to see the event. I did see some of the clips online, and some of the fights looked good. I know there were some questions about the Bobby Gunn fight. Some people thought that, you know, maybe there was some suspicious activity. Again, I don't want to, you know, draw any type of conclusions or make any type of suggestions out there and whatnot. But I don't know if there's really going to be a market for this. I don't know if we're going to see the second installment of this, the second round or whatever of the tournament. You know, we'll have to see. The fights were exciting. I mean, you know, people that were in attendance proclaimed that the fights are very, very exciting, but I don't know. You know, they want to play games. This is why I've given up covering this stuff to a certain extent. You know, I've had a long relationship with Bellator. I mean, I've been covering Bellator events since 2008, and a lot of it's political. This is where the politics comes in and all the bullshit. I covered the IFL going back to 2006 and 2007, and the UFC won't even put me on their press list. The UFC has been absolutely disgusting when it comes to independent media. it's just terrible. They want their approved media. They always give that clown, John Morgan. What the hell does John Morgan do? They give this guy every press pass or every press conference. It always goes to this slob, John Morgan, with his stupid aqua blue shirt. It's just pathetic. I mean, this is how rigged the press conferences are, the media scrums are, because the UFC is under Dana White. It's very vindictive. It's disgraceful how they deal with media. You know, we've seen it time and time again. Eddie Goldman was banned from covering the UFC. He was the first. Forget about Ariel Helwani. Ariel Helwani is a newbie. He's a Johnny come lately. Eddie Goldman was there. Eddie Goldman was the first journalist to be banned from covering Zuffa events because Dana White accused Eddie of publicizing stuff about the Fertitta's father. Who was it? Anthony Fertitta? I don't know. Anthony Fertitta Sr., the guy that had, was convicted of bribery. And it was a big thing. And they banned Eddie. And Eddie's never covered a UFC event since then. He's the true martyr there. But it's just so fake. And it's so deplorable how they deal with it. And it's like that too with these other promotions. They have no loyalty. There's no, you know, it's all this game. It's this political game about, you know, favoritism and you know which sites are the most accepted and the most, you know, proven or whatever. And you know, guys that are truly independent, that, you know, don't have an axe to grind, that tell you what they think, that they often get the shaft. And there's, you know, Mike Russell has done some good reporting about some of these sites like MMA Fighting and others that, you know, are getting paid by the UFC. And it's all this, you know, this backroom, you know, dealing crap and all this stuff. The relationship between WMEIMG and some of the fighters that the UFC is pushing. There's a lot of stuff that nobody talks about in the UFC-approved media because they need the UFC for their survival. So that's it. You know, you're going to get the shill Ariel Helwani, you know, who now all of a sudden is going to be on ESPN Plus with Chael Sonnen doing this podcast where, you know, this is what's going to happen. He's going to be a UFC, essentially on the payroll of the UFC. It's disgusting. All right, let's go to Jack Klassen now. Jack, you there?
Hey, how you doing, Bob? It's awesome. You know what? Did they actually do bare knuckle fighting? Is that a thing?
Hell yeah,
man. 1932? Is this 1932? Are we in the Depression?
It might as well be.
What?
Absolutely.
That's insane. Like, what timeline is this?
I don't know, man.
Who's fighting? Were they like
they
big fighters, like unknown?
Yeah. They had several MMA fighters there. Eric Prindle, who's a former Bellator champion, he's a friend of mine. Army veteran. They had Joey Bell. I mean, I can rattle off a whole bunch of names.
That's
Rollins from the
UFC. That's insane. That's
and it was
it's
regulated.
Like it's 1932.
It was
hey,
fully
here.
Regulated
don't,
too.
Don't bring this. Don't bring your dame to the fight. This is going to be one big rip rambling fight. Whatever they say in 1932. What? That's insane. Wow. So I love the show, my friend. I just got to say, you're big into the UFC. Have you ever met Joe Rogan?
No.
No, I had the pleasure of hunting with him in Edmonton, Alberta.
Get out of here, really?
Yeah, seriously. It was, honest to God, it was a fantastic experience. And I'd love to just tell it on your show. My show is not very MMA eccentric. I've told it before, and I thought, you know, maybe this is like a good scoop for you. It was pretty good. So I was working at the gas station, the Husky gas station in Edmonton. I won't say exactly where. And I just met this guy, and he had all his gear. He had a big brand new Dodge Ram, like a 3500 Dodge Ram, just
right.
It was a brand new truck, right? So I'm talking to him. I go, "What are you doing out here?" And he's going, "Oh, I'm just going out hunting. Where I think it was hunting elk. He was looking for elk in Banff." And I was going, "Hey, you know what? I'm going out there this weekend. Me and my buddy are going hunting." And honest to God, I know it's. I always get a little bit nervous telling this story. But anyway, so we end up going on the weekend to Banff, Canada, and I just so happen we end up seeing this guy. This, honest to God, we're in Banff, Canada. We meet him, and I didn't know who Joe Rogan was. I didn't pay attention to MMA. I didn't really care. Like, Fear Factor, I love to stand up.
Sure.
Didn't really pay attention to this. I didn't know it was Joe Rogan at the time. Anyway, we went out hunting, and, you know, everything's going cool. We're not really talking to them, but we're in their vicinity, right? Anyway, it gets dark outside. It's starting to get cold outside. It's about November, so it's getting actually pretty cold. It's about minus 23, right, in Banff. It's cold. We're in the you know, the north, right?
Right.
And anyway, so we start a fire, and then we see, you know, not even just 100 yards away, we see, so we're going, "Oh, that's kind of fun," right? So we take our camo off. We just put our big heavy parkas on, and we say, "Let's go walk over there." So we walk over there. We check him out, and sure enough, it's Joe Rogan, and I'm not too sure who the other guy was. He was some army dude. He was like some some thin army dude. He had a thin mustache. It was, anyway.
Okay.
I don't know who he was. Anyway, I was with Joe. Anyway, it was just Joe Rogan. I get so excited telling this story because I'm a big fan of Joe Rogan.
Right.
I met him, right? So anyway, we talked to him. We go, "Hey, we got a couple beers. You know, give Joe and this other guy a beer. We're just hanging out." And, you know, he goes, "Hey, do you have any luck today?" We go, "No, we were tracking something. It got lost. Nah, nah, nah." And we go, "Well, did you guys have any luck?" And sure enough, he points over, and there is, honest to God, there's three black bears.
Holy shit.
And that's just it. It's not even just holy shit, three black bears. There's three black bears, two cougars. It's like, I don't know what this guy's on. Like, what has this guy been doing all week? And get this.
Right.
Four elk. Like, this is insane. I've been doing this with my dad for a while here, and I've never seen something like this, right?
Right.
So I'm stoked. We ask him, he goes, "Hey, what's the secret?" And he goes, like, how'd you guys get this? What's kind of weird about it is a lot of these are out of season, which is weird. But they explain it by saying they had a special license of some sort. But anyway, I'm assuming Joe Rogan would do anything bad like that. So we just accepted it. We hung out. It was cool. And then this is actually funny because then Joe, this is my dad. Now I'm remembering, this is the first time I smoked weed. Joe Rogan rolled a joint, and we're sitting around the campfire, and I'm going next to my dad, and he goes, "Hey, you want to smoke this joint with me?" And I look at my dad, and he goes, "It's okay, son. You can smoke weed with the Rogan." And I'm like,
"Oh, shit."
And that was super cool, right? He's like, "You can smoke weed with the Rogan." And I've never, smoked weed before. And he goes, "Man, I'm going to teach you how to smoke weed." And he pressed the joint up against my lips. He handed me, he said, "Come up, come close." And he puts the joint right up to my lips. And he goes, "Suck, suck."
Mm-hmm.
So I start sucking. And oh my God, it's working. It's crazy. So I keep sucking. And I'm going, "Okay, this has to be, like, this is how I'm doing it." He goes, "Keep doing it, dude. Keep doing it." And I'm like, "Okay, it's getting hard to breathe because I've never really smoked. I didn't even smoke cigarettes at that time." And, anyway, he goes, "Oh, man, you're almost fucking doing it." Oh, pardon my bad language there, but, anyway, he does that, and I end up smoking the whole joint all at once. The first time smoking weed with the Joe Rogan. It was crazy.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And
How long were you there with him?
Oh, we were there for 4 days. It was awesome. We got to we talked Bigfoot, we talked UFOs, we saw a UFO, which was awesome, seeing a UFO with Joe Rogan looking back now, because I watched his show, and it's like, oh, man, you were looking for UFOs, and now we saw one. Like, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
You know?
That's fucking awesome.
And it's, dude, and this guy, man, he built a cabin when we were up there in the span of 4 days. He built a cabin up there, just straight out of wood.
Yeah.
Isn't that nuts? Shit. Like, and traps. He showed me how to tie knots. It was insane. And then the last night we were there, this is just how we ended it. We packed up all our things. He gave us one of the bears, which was nice. He gave us one of the black bears, which was fun. I don't know. We just ended up throwing it away because I didn't want to get arrested. But anyway, before we left, Joe Rogan looked at me and he said, "Son, this has been a great experience. I will never forget our weekend together." And he pulled close and he gave me a kiss on the forehead. I thought that was really cool of him, you know? And that was my Joe Rogan experience for you.
Well, that's awesome.
It was real cool. He was a real friendly guy.
Well, that's good, man. This paints a picture of Joe Rogan, I think, anyway. I posted this on the Underground Forum. On air now, caller says he met Rogan in Canada. The first time he smoked weed was with Rogan. And this will get out there, and Rogan will probably hear this, and so he'll.
Can I then plug my website jackklassen.com, because I'd love to talk to Rogan again. He was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Go to that website, folks. How often do you have a podcast?
Jackklassen.com. I do a podcast and I do a radio show, but Canada won't let me broadcast because I'm a little too iffy up here. So I broadcast into Alabama and Tampa Bay, and I do a podcast.
Okay.
You can find everything at jackklassen.com, my friend.
That sounds good. Well, listen, Jack, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story with Joe Rogan. Amazing stuff there. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
It's all good. I appreciate you, Bob. We've been friends for a while, so I thought I'd give you that scoop, my friend. I like your MMA show.
Likewise, brother. Let's talk again sometime real soon, my friend.
Yeah. Peace and love, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Peace and love. Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Wow, that's an amazing, amazing story. I just posted it on the Underground Forum. Folks, listen to it. That's great stuff. That definitely seems like how Rogan would behave, you know? And building a cabin and building all that stuff, you know, Rogan was probably with one of his military survivalist guys, you know, one of these real, like a Tim Kennedy type guy or something like that, that could build all these things in out of nothing and make a fort like a MacGyver or whatnot. But thanks again, Jack, for calling in. Thanks to you out there, the people that have listened to this great program. It's been fun kicking it with you here Friday. It's almost 11 o'clock on Eastern Standard Time. I got to go to work tomorrow. It's 5,000 degrees in my room. There's no air conditioning here. This is absurd. We're about to get evicted. This is all oppression. I'm being oppressed here, folks, okay? This is unbelievable. I can't go to sleep. You know how hot it is? It's ridiculous. My window doesn't fit. There's no an air conditioning unit won't fit my window. It's just, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. I bought one of those as seen on TV air conditioners. You ever see the Arctic air crap that you see where you fill it with water and it takes the hot water and it purifies it or hot air and makes it cool, and supposedly it cools down this area. Well, it doesn't work. It's just such a piece of crap. I returned it 2 days later. It was terrible. So this is what I have to do. I have to broadcast to you in 5,000 degree heat. I can't even breathe, folks. I'm going to have to go into cardiac arrest here. I can't breathe, okay? I'm like Eric Garner here. I can't breathe. I'm just kidding. God rest his soul. Eric Garner spurred on a whole movement highlighting the treatment of black Americans in America. Do you know that I used to have my Black Lives Matter bumper sticker on my car? And I had a it's actually a relief that that sticker is no longer on my car, because I don't get into fights with people anymore. You know, every single day I'd get into a fight with somebody because they had that sticker on my car and no longer exists. So my car doesn't draw any attention. Speaking of police brutality and police interaction, I'm actually set to get my 2018 PBA card. Very excited about that. A good friend of mine is a former police officer, and he's given me a PBA card. And so this way I can not get any tickets, hopefully, when I get pulled over. So, all right, thank you very much. We really appreciate everybody for listening. Thank you for coming on down to Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. If you want to friend me, please do so on Facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. Follow me on Twitter, Twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. You could also follow me on YouTube, YouTube.com/Carson's Corner. And make sure to check us out on Blog Talk Radio, BlogTalkRadio.com/Carson's Corner. Watch UFC 225 tomorrow. I'll be watching it. I'm sure I'll be posting on Twitter as well. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.